Welcome to Unraveling, a podcast which has been created to speak openly about the messy truths of life. I'm your host, Lauren Barber, and my intention for this podcast is to express my own real life experiences and that of my guests in a raw and authentic way. It has become a passion of mine to speak honestly and vulnerably about the ups and downs that many of us experience in this roller coaster ride of life. That means huge celebrations and earth-shattering rock bottoms. The reality is we feel and experience it all. Unraveling strips away layers of conditioning, shame, fear, and worry by opening up the conversation to talk about the subjects that are sometimes hidden away. This means you can expect total, open-hearted, truthful discussions about what it really is like to be a human being. Thank you for joining me on this beautiful, but sometimes chaotic, journey of unraveling. Now let's head to the show. Hello, everyone. So this is the first episode I've recorded since back at the beginning of 2019. The podcast has had a little bit of a break whilst I have transformed, shall we say, as many of you probably know, or you may not know, I had a baby in September, and last year was definitely consumed by pregnancy and by birth and by rebirthing myself as a mother in this really powerful transformative process. So I am not entirely sure where this episode is going to go. I have intentions for this episode, but I also have no idea how many times I'm going to have to pause and start recording again, because I have a little soul hanging around that is with me a lot of the time. So who knows when she will need me. So I will be maybe dipping in and out. My intention for this podcast is to talk a little bit about my birth story, and it's taken me, I mean, Sophia is now just over 16 weeks old, and I feel have felt really cool to share my birth story over the last few weeks, and since she was born really, but now is just seems to be the right time. So so there's not going to be a big structured format to this show. I'm just going to talk about my experience with birth and, you know, with the view of just sharing my honest experience, because it has certainly been a pivotal time in my life, a pivotal transition and a huge, huge shift for me, both physically, energetically, spiritually, emotionally, mentally. It is, as people said to me beforehand, it is about birthing a baby, but it's also about birthing a mother and birthing yourself, or rebirthing yourself. The person I was 6 months ago, a year ago, 2 years ago is very different to the person I am today. And obviously we change all the time, and that's absolutely the, you know, one of the things to embrace about being a human being. But the changes that have occurred in the last year have been phenomenal. And it seems quite a perfect timing, because it is pretty much to the day a year since I found out I was expecting Sophia. So I'm going to start a little bit by talking about my birth plan. And I laugh, because plan is certainly something that I would not associate now with birth. However, I do think it is really beautiful to have intentions and hopes and wishes for birth. But I was very much of the opinion, or of the I was open to the shifts. I had, I guess because there is so much uncertainty around birth anyway, I had I didn't have expectations. I had no idea. And I think that's often what can cause a little bit of anxiety about thinking about birth. I didn't feel anxious, actually. I felt very trusting that Sophia knew how she should be born. However, I did have visions and ideas and some hopes, I guess, hopes and wishes for my birth, for Sophia's birth. And I'll tell you, you know, I'll explain a little bit about what I was hoping for, because I think it's really important to, I guess, be open to the plot twists and the pivots in birth. And I had been really beautifully prepared by amazing friends, my amazing doula, Laura, and my amazing friend, Katie, who was also my hypnobirthing teacher, and a lot of really supportive women around me who helped me to feel empowered to make the right choices, the choices that felt right for me and for Sophia and for our family along the way. And that was to get quite clear on my intentions for birth. So I felt in myself that I was very, I felt organized. I felt like I had at least voiced them or expressed them. I typed them up on documents and had them printed out. But I have to say, those notes never made it out of my hospital bag. And that kind of gives you a bit of an idea of where my plan went to. So I had always, even before Sophia decided to let us know that she was coming, I had always hoped and wished for a home birth in the water, in a very safe, calm environment in my home. And that is effectively what my birth plan was. It was very little intervention, with as little intervention as possible. I had my home birth box delivered at, I think it was about 36 weeks pregnant, maybe 34 weeks. Everything was set up. I had the birth pool in my dining room. It was blown up from 38 weeks. And I had everything in place. I'd done my birth vision board. I had candles I'd bought specifically for birth. I had everything in place for my home birth. And I felt like I was ready for that. However, plot twist. My due date, that elusive date that we are given and has so much pressure around it. My due date was the 20th of September, and it came and it went and it passed, and I found myself starting to doubt my path, I guess, or starting to become a little bit more uncertain about where birth was going to take us. And it, in some ways, it was quite good to let go. By 40 weeks, I think I'd let go of a lot of expectations, because I had sort of thought she might come early, but she was not ready to arrive before the time she arrived. So the following week, so the Tuesday after her estimated due date, which had been the Friday, I started to experience surges overnight. And I'd already had, I had thought my waters had broken on the Monday, but it turned out that wasn't my waters breaking, luckily, because I would have then been on the 24-hour clock as the hospital put you on to, had I not gone into labour, and I would have probably had to look at induction and other elements at that point. But my waters hadn't broken. But I did start to experience surges that were quite close together, but pretty mild on the Tuesday night. They continued all night. So I was like, oh, this is it. This is this is happening, it's starting. I was timing them. I had the TENS machine on. I was sort of getting into my zone. I woke up. I think I sort of had the surges for a couple of hours, and then it was in the morning when my husband woke up and I said, oh, I think it's happening. And it was like, oh, okay, wow. But soon after we woke up, the surges stopped and they kind of came to a halt. And I was like, oh, that's a bit weird. I'd spoken to my doula at this point, and we were kind of just, you know, keeping an eye on the situation. And so the surges stopped completely for that whole of Wednesday. And then they began again on Wednesday night. So Wednesday night, they became a little bit more intense. They were quite close together. And I was like, oh, this is it, it's happening. And then the next morning, Thursday morning, they stopped again. they came to a halt. And I was a little bit, I couldn't help but be a bit frustrated at this point, partly because I wasn't able to sleep. They were intense enough to not sleep, but not intense enough to be, you know, in active labor or to be checked or monitored in any way. So I spoke to the midwives a couple of times and I just sort of said what was going on. And amazing midwives came out, I think it was on the Thursday, and just had a chat to us and just said, you know, like, well, you know, we're on call, we're kind of waiting for your phone call and hopefully it'll happen this evening. But they started again, the contractions, the surges started again on the Thursday night. And by this point I was like, okay, we know the drill. We get the surges overnight and then they stop in the next morning. And they did slow down by the Friday morning, but they were still continuing. So I was like, okay, maybe we're getting a little bit closer here. We were just taking it easy. I think we watched the entire Twilight trilogy, or I don't think so, maybe there's four episodes, I can't remember, four movies. We watched, you know, lots of Netflix, lay on the sofa, cuddled the dog, went for gentle walks and took it really easy, had baths. It was a nice time, but it was quite intense and it was making me a little bit anxious. My main anxiety actually was regarding my energy levels and whether I was going to be able to deal with birth, because I was not sleeping because the surges were coming regularly enough to disrupt my sleep. So by the Friday evening, they had intensified significantly. And by about, I think about midnight on Friday night, or maybe sort of 11 o'clock Friday night, they had ramped up in a big way. And there was, you know, the TENS machine was not touching it anymore. I was in a lot of pain, a lot of discomfort. And I was like, okay, this is happening. So we had, the doula was here. She was really amazing, helping me through the surges, as was my husband. You know, they were putting pressure on my sacrum, helping to relieve through the surges. And I was using the TENS machine. I was having a bath. We called out the home birth midwife and she examined me and she broke the news to me that I was only 2 centimeters dilated, at which point I kind of lost it, just because I was so tired already and the pain was intense. I was finding myself bracing against the surges, which wasn't helping. But I just had reached a point where I just was like, I don't know if I can do this. I felt like I don't know if I can keep going like this. It's so intense. And knowing that I still had so far to go and that I wasn't even classed as active labor yet, so I couldn't be admitted into hospital. I couldn't go anywhere, you know, I couldn't go to the birth center and be admitted there. However, The midwife suggested that I went to the local birth center, spent a couple of hours there, and they could give me a drug called Oromorph, which I had originally said I didn't want any drugs, I didn't want any pain relief. I just need some rest. And she assured me that because I was early on, that the drug would have worn off and wouldn't affect the baby in any way by the time she was born. So we went off to the birth center. The drive was interesting. probably felt like the longest drive of my life. And we got to the birth center and I took this drug and we sort of rested. I would say it took the edge off my anxiety. And one of the midwives there was incredibly helpful. She gave me this suggestion to help me through the surges. And it was something that I actually held on to throughout the whole rest of the birth process. And it was to bring myself, and it was perfect for me because of my background with yoga and meditation. And I was doing a lot of the breath techniques from our hypnobirthing, but something was still making me brace against the power of the surges. So she suggested to do a body scan as the surges came on. So as the surges were there, she suggested that I softened, and I consciously stated to myself, okay, I'm relaxing the crown of my head, I'm relaxing my jaw, I'm relaxing my shoulders, I'm relaxing my belly, I'm relaxing my uterus, I'm relaxing my womb, relaxing my legs. And so I did this scan through every single contraction, and it really did help me, actually. And so the next morning, it was probably about 9 o'clock on the Saturday morning, the lovely midwife came in after we'd had a bit of rest in the birth center. And she said, well, you know, there's nothing we can do, really. You just need to go home and wait it out. And I was like, please, can I stay here? And she was like, we can't have you stay here. You know, like you're effectively taking up a room with someone who needs it. And I wasn't in established labor, so there was not really anything they could do. In the meantime, I had become a little bit concerned because Sophia wasn't moving as much as she had been. So I said to the midwife, I think we maybe need to just go and get her checked and monitored at the hospital to make sure that everything's okay, just for peace of mind. So she rang ahead and said, yep, they're expecting you. You can head straight to Pembury. So we went from Maidstone to Pembury, and I was still having very strong surges throughout this time, throughout the whole time at this point. They weren't stopping in the day. They were pretty intense. I was having to breathe I was having to do a lot of breath work to get through them, a lot of focusing my attention on the power of the surges. And it's was wearing me down. I won't pretend, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It was intense, it was extremely powerful is probably the best way to describe it. So we headed to Pembury and we waited in the waiting room, and then I got hooked up to the monitor to check her heart rate and to check the contractions. And I do remember one of the midwives or the people in triage coming in and going, oh, it sounds like you're having Braxton Hicks. And I literally wanted to punch her. My rage. I was like, oh, you think it's Braxton Hicks, do you? Okay. And then the next thing, she came in and she looked at the monitor and she was like, oh, you're having quite powerful contractions, aren't you? And I was like, yeah, no shit, Sherlock. I think I would know if this was Braxton Hicks versus actual contractions. Anyway, I think you do tend to kind of go into a bit, perhaps maybe not defensiveness, but I was, you know, I was in a little bit of discomfort, shall we say, at this point. So to be then kind of insinuated that this isn't that bad, I was not really, didn't take that very well, shall we say. But it turned out that Sophia's heart rate was pretty much fine, but it kept doing what they called suspicious behavior. So they kept me in for several hours and kept monitoring me, to the point where I was like, I'm in quite a lot of discomfort now. I am exhausted and I'm really not sure that I can you know, I can do this without any pain relief now. Oh, I forgot to mention that in the morning, as we had driven back from the birth center to Pembrey, I had actually said the words to Will, I never want to see the birth pool again. I do not want to go home and see that birth pool inflated in our dining room. I need to let go of the home birth. And I had a message. I had a message conversation with Laura, our doula. And I said, I know that I need to let go of my hopes for a home birth because I don't feel safe at home now. I don't feel like it's the right place for me. And actually, when I walked into Pembrey, I just felt the hospital locally to us. I just felt like, yeah, I need to be here. I felt safe. I felt looked after. And I do think, I'm skipping around here a bit, but I do think that subconsciously, there was something that was holding me back from being able to feel safe enough to have my home birth that I had hoped for. And I think when I let go of that, it allowed my body to the kind of relief of that and actually for my body to take over. And I felt safe. It really reminded me of just how powerful our body and our mind is and how linked they are in birth. Because the minute I felt safe, interestingly, when I was in Pembrey, I was in a room. I had this amazing midwife from Triage who was so supportive and so helpful. She get me have some gas and air. And then she said, I'm just going to examine you just to, you know, see where we're at. And I was like, oh, you know, well, they're just going to send me home. And she examined me and she went, oh, your waters have broken and you're actually 4 centimeters dilated. This was about 4 o'clock on the Saturday. So I'd been in labor since Tuesday, effectively, on the Saturday. So I was like, oh my God, like, this is amazing. And she said, well, we can basically get you into a delivery suite now. And the relief. But obviously, because my water had broken, I was again once, and we think they had probably possibly broken in the morning. They were more like a trickle rather than a gush, which again wasn't entirely, you know, I didn't know what to expect. So it wasn't probably what you would think of in the movies as the big, you know, splash of water. So I remember walking to the delivery suite and having to stop several times and hold on to the railings. And it felt like I walked for miles, but apparently it was maybe just like a couple of doors down in the corridor. But I was so in my body at that point and so in the process that I just, you know, I was kind of oblivious and I was just, you know, in the power of the surges. I had been taking some of the gas and air at this point, and I was one of those people that thought, oh, I'm not going to like the gas and air. It's going to make me feel like dizzy and a bit sick. But I pretty much got like high as a kite on the gas and air. It didn't affect, I mean, I wouldn't say that it necessarily takes the pain away, but it certainly took me to another planet, which... When I got into the delivery suite, the surges were so intense that I was literally off my face on gas and air. And I'm not entirely sure of what happened in the next few hours, to be perfectly honest. I'd probably have to find out more from my doula and from Will. But effectively, I was waiting. I decided at this point I was going to have an epidural. I was waiting for an epidural. And it was like just this blur of, I don't know, I can't even just, it was like an out-of-body experience because I was just, I had no concept of time. I had no concept of what was going on in this room. I was so connected into these surges and the gas and air was kind of taking me to this other level. And I felt so trusting of my team there, of my support with Laura, with Will, and with the people around me, the midwives. I just like completely surrendered into the process. And part of me wonders what would have happened if I hadn't had the epidural and whether I would have stayed in that zone and whether maybe labor would have continued a little bit quicker. But I had decided at that point to have an epidural. And the main reason for me was because I was so tired, I wanted to have the epidural. So I was opting for a mobile epidural. So in theory, so my legs, I could still walk around and move if I needed to. My idea was, obviously I was 4 centimeters dilated at this point, and there was still a way to go, and we had no idea how long that was going to take. So I wanted a chance to be able to rest and replenish myself in order to prepare for the later stages of birth and the intensity. So I remember like the chaos of, and the high sort of really, really high energy in the room, all the while building up to having this epidural. I had the, I can remember having the needle into the spine. I'm actually pretty terrified of needles, to be honest. But by this point, I had a cannula in. I really just was so in the process that it wasn't an issue for me at all. And it was one of the things I was most scared of, to be honest. I just remember the anaesthetist saying that if I had a contraction, to let him know so that he could like back off with the needle or something like that, so that I didn't have to worry about trying to stay really still. And I could just remember being like, there's a contraction coming, and just hoping that, you know, it was okay, and just looking up at Laura and Will, and just my eyes were just locked onto theirs during this process. And they were both like, you're okay, we're here, you're safe. And I was like, okay, that's fine, like, they say that I'm safe, okay, that's fine. I was totally in their hands. And and then it was almost instant that, like, the energy of the room just completely calmed, and suddenly we were kind of all sitting there, and it was like, oh, you know, like the intensity had totally dropped. It was such a strange experience to go from that real high, almost frantic but not unpleasant energy to this really kind of big, it was like a big deep breath, a big sigh of relief when the room just kind of calmed down, and it was just me, Laura, Will, and our midwife in there. And it was like, oh, okay. So I think it was about 9 o'clock that I had the epidural, and a few hours later I realized that I was still experiencing sensations and discomfort despite having had the epidural. And I know that you are, like, often you still feel the sort of pressure and the tightenings, but this was still pain. And it was only on one side. So it turned out that I'm one of those people that the epidurals don't entirely work on. I didn't really kind of know about this before I was in that situation, but I found that they had to, basically, long and short story is that they had to keep coming in and I think they call it boosting it or bolstering or something, to try and, like, see if the fluid would get to the right parts and to help me to ease the pain. And it would work for a bit and then it would wear off, but I was basically feeling the whole intensity of the contraction on my left side to start with. And at about 2 o'clock in the morning, so we're just kind of working through this, 2 a.m. in the morning, they did an examination on me, and they said, right, you're still only 4 centimeters dilated. And I was like, you're kidding me, right? I was like, this can't be happening. They said, we really need to give you the oxytocin drip to help induce or to help to progress your labor. And I knew from experience, but from speaking to people, because I'd done a lot of research and I'd got a lot of I knew my options. I knew that the induction drip effectively would supercharge my contractions, and I was scared because I was already feeling a lot of discomfort because the epidural wasn't working fully, and I knew that these contractions were going to get stronger and stronger. So I said, I will, after speaking to the doctor, after talking it through with Laura, I decided to go with the induction drip, but they said they would re-administer the epidural so that it would hopefully actually give me the relief that I needed. And again, to get me the rest, a little bit of rest through this time, because we didn't know how long it was going to take. So I had a second epidural, which again, I was fine. Wasn't the fear that the scary process that I thought it was going to be. And then they administered the drip. They put the oxytocin drip in, and lo and behold, the epidural still didn't work. So this time, instead of feeling it on my left side, I could feel it across my hip flexors. And I'm very conscious of, you know, if you haven't had a baby and you're pregnant and you're listening to this, and I don't want this to fill you with fear, because in the situation, it's amazing what you deal with. I would, if someone had told me in preparation that this is what was going to happen, I would not have dealt with it very well. But the body is incredibly adaptable. The mind is so much more powerful than we can ever imagine. And in that process, I just dealt with it. It was fine. I had the support. I had the people around me that I needed. And I knew that my baby was on her way and she was okay. You know, the heart rate was being checked. She was happy, she was content, she was calm throughout the whole process. So I was just like, you know, I just got to get this done, you know, just got to do this. So I was feeling the contractions in my hip flexors. There was times, I won't lie, that I totally lost my shit and I was like, I can't do this. This is way too intense. And I think we basically kept going until about 10 o'clock on the Sunday morning. So I'd gone into labor on the Tuesday and this was now the Sunday morning. And I remember thinking, oh, I've just remembered another bit. In the middle of the night, before the syntocin drip was popped in, I begged the doctor for a cesarean because I said that I was terrified that it was going to end in an emergency cesarean anyway. And I just didn't want to go through the process of this, the discomfort and the emotional rollercoaster and the exhausting energy exertion if it was going to end up in that anyway. So I was like, can I not just elect for a C-section now? I practically begged the doctor and he obviously said no. So yeah, I just thought, I just remembered that, and sorry, this is a bit all over the place, but it's all coming back to me. So the next morning, a different doctor came in at 10 o'clock because I said to the midwife, I was like, look, I'm in quite a lot of pain. If I haven't progressed, then I think we need to think about whether I'm going to have a C-section, a cesarean, because I don't feel that I don't feel like I've got the energy much longer. So the doctor came in and he examined me and he said, so the good news is you're 10 centimeters dilated and you can start pushing in 2 hours. And I was like, holy shit. Oh my God. So even though they had only been putting a tiny bit of the oxytocin drip in me, because every time they tried to increase it, the contractions were too intense for me to deal with. It had still worked. It had still done what it needed to do. And I was ready to birth my baby. And now, nobody told me beforehand that the hospital protocol is that once you get to 10 centimeters dilated, you wait 2 hours before you start actively pushing. I mean, I hadn't ever heard that before, to be honest. And I believe, and now I'm not 100% sure, but I believe it's because in those couple of hours, the baby can still shift and get into a better position to push from. But I'm not entirely sure, so forgive me if that's the incorrect answer. So that 2 hours was very bizarre. I was still in quite a lot of discomfort, but it was like everything kind of paused. And we had, I had a wild orange essential oil on a flannel, and basically that's what got me through the contractions because I just would inhale this essential oil, and somehow I just remember getting to this 2-hour point and being like, okay, now it's time. It's now time to push. And I can't, it was, it, the pushing phase worked for me. I didn't love it. I know a lot of women say that that's the bit that they feel really empowered because they're actually doing something. And I found the discomfort of it quite intense. And maybe it's due to her positioning, I'm not sure. But it felt like, well, I'll be totally honest. I felt like I was pushing, I was going to push like my organs out of my bum hole. And I'm really sorry if that offends you, but that is what it felt like. It felt like something, when I was pushing, it didn't feel like I was pushing a baby out. It felt like I was literally, something was like, I was pushing something out of my bum. And I believe that that's what I was supposed to feel, but it was pretty intense. And I didn't wholly love the sensation, to be perfectly honest. But the midwives helped me because obviously my body wasn't doing, because of the synthetic oxytocin and because of the epidural, my body wasn't, the fetal eject reflex wasn't it like in action. So it wasn't like my body was pushing for me. So I had to push. I had to really push. But luckily, because the epidural hadn't worked, so I see this as a plus point, I could feel the contractions. So I knew when I could use the power of the contractions to actually push. And it was, despite it feeling quite uncomfortable, me wishing for it to end, it actually went pretty quickly. And within an hour, Sophia was born. So I think I started pushing at 11:45. And at, so it was just over an hour, 12:50 p.m., Sophia was born. And it, well, that in itself is probably like a whole nother podcast episode, but I remember the sensations of her crowning. I remember the energy of the room. I remember feeling pretty powerful, I have to say, as I birthed her. And then the sensation of her crowning, and then the relief when her body came out and the shoulders came out, and that did kind of, it felt like that she slid out at that point. I mean, I think there was still an element of effort, but the next minute she was being put on my chest, and I was just in like awe of this little being. Now, I do want to share that there's a lot of pressure on people to have this like flood of love, of this like intense love when you see your baby for the first time. And I'm sure for a lot of people, they do get that. And I did have this love for her. Like I had this, you know, it was there, but it wasn't the kind of explosive rainbow firework love that I was sort of expecting, which I think if you weren't prepared for it not to be like that, and luckily I have a lot of friends that had been very honest about that as well, I think that could be quite unsettling for you if you were expecting that and it didn't happen. And actually, when I've spoken to most people, that hasn't happened for them. The overwhelming feeling I had when Sophia was born was relief that I was okay, that she was okay, that she was here, that the sensations were over, that that after this 9 months or over 9 months of her being in my tummy, in my womb, she was here, she was earthside. She was, you know, she was beautiful. I just remember looking up at Will, who was next to me, and just being like, oh my God, like she's here. Oh my God. Like I don't even know that you can kind of capture the feelings in words, because it's just, it's just the most, it's like nothing on earth. And yeah, so Sophia Lily Rose Barber was born on the 29th of September at 12:50 p.m. The placenta was born, I birthed the placenta pretty quickly afterwards. I don't even really remember that bit, to be honest. I also had second degree tears. and quite a lot of grazing. So I had quite a lot of stitches, and that was fun. I just remember being literally like on my back, legs akimbo in stirrups, with Sophia on my chest, and just focusing on her as it felt like about 15 people were basically staring at my vagina and like kind of trying to patch it back up. And there were two funny moments. Well, not so funny really, but in hindsight they're funny. One was in fact the first one's not really funny. She said, "Oh, I'm not really sure where this blood's coming from." And then the other bit was when she was stitching me up and she went, "Oh, I'm not sure where that bit goes. I'm just going to go and get the doctor." And I was like, yes, please. I didn't ask for like a remodel of my vagina, not entirely anyway, although I think, to be honest, I've got that anyway. The doctor came and fixed me up. And then we just had time in the delivery suite until we were moved into the postnatal unit for the night. And it was just like, I don't know, it was like the peace after the storm. just being there with Sophia and Will and just having us three as our family for the first time. It was beautiful, overwhelming, terrifying. My legs were like jelly, obviously, as the epidural was wearing off. And just, yeah, the first thing, like the first steps you take, the first time you go to the toilet, the first of everything when you've had a baby is pretty intense. Another thing I sort of failed to mention is on the Friday before I'd gone into labor, or before I'd gone into more active labor, I had that was the last meal I ate, basically, because I felt sick constantly after eating that and I just could not stomach anything. And so after birth, I remember the best meal probably of my life was a white breaded plain cheese sandwich, like a packaged one that the midwife brought in, and I have never tasted anything so good in my life. I literally inhaled this sandwich, and I had all these plans and all these healthy snacks in my bag, my coconut water, everything, and I was like, just give me the sandwich. Just give me the cheese sandwich. And I literally inhaled it. It was hilarious. But it tasted so good. So what is there else to tell you about birth, about my birth story? I'm not even sure if, you know, if people are that interested, but I felt like I wanted to share this just so maybe for my own benefit, but maybe just, I think for me, there was quite a lot of acceptance that I had to go through, because being a yoga teacher and in this kind of holistic world, I felt like I should have been able to have this natural birth, this water birth, no intervention, no epidural, no need for drugs or anything like that. And there was a tiny part of me that had to really process that, because it felt like for a moment I maybe thought that there was like an element of failure there, but I allowed that to come up and I allowed myself to experience that, I guess, the grief for the birth that I was hoping for. But what I would say is that I wouldn't change anything about my birth. I would not change anything, because it showed me strength, it showed me power, it showed me that I was capable of making choices, it showed me how important it is to have people around me that I trust. And I had Laura and Will were absolutely incredible to have by my side. And also knowing I had a village around me with very good friends who were there to support me afterwards and during, and that loved me, and my family were so, you know, just knowing that they were all there and that they were, you know, in not physically there, but there kind of supporting and sending love was just so powerful. And I know that it would have been worrying for them as well from the outside, because actually for me, when I was in it, the time became irrelevant in some ways, and it just felt like I don't know, I was in it, and I wasn't worried, I wasn't scared, I wasn't anxious. I felt empowered pretty much the whole way. The only thing that I felt anxiety over was the tiredness and worry, and my worry was that I wasn't going to be able to have the energy to get through the final stages of birth. But once again, my body totally astounded me, and it did it. Something shifted, something just, you know, it just did it. I just managed to dig deep, and I did it. And I will never ever feel I don't know, it's given me so much gratitude and so much appreciation for my body. And I guess I feel like I wanted to share this because things don't go to plan when it comes to birth, and it's okay as long as you feel able to make choices and as long as you feel empowered. It doesn't matter how your baby is born, as long as you are empowered in that process and you're given choices and you're treated with respect by the people around you and you're supported. However your baby is born, the most important thing is that you're both okay, that you feel empowered by that experience, even if it goes completely off plan. As I said at the beginning, my birth plans, which were 3 pages long, I had 3 versions printed out in a folder in my bag, they never came out of the bag. And that to me sums up my birth. So thank you so much for listening. I hope you found it interesting, if nothing else. And I'd always be open for conversations around this, if it sparked anything, if it resonates, if it doesn't resonate. I'd love to hear from you. So do drop me an email or get in touch via social media or through my website. And I'm just so grateful to be able to share this on this platform. And I am so grateful for this experience, because I don't think I've ever felt stronger or more in my power as a woman. I'm going to record a whole nother episode on the fourth trimester and beyond, because, you know, the afterbirth is another story in itself. So with that, I'm going to say goodbye, and I look forward to sharing more in another episode. Thank you for listening. Lots of love. I am so grateful that you chose to listen to this episode of Unraveling today. If you enjoyed this conversation and want to make sure you never ever miss an episode, then please subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. And if you want to get in touch with me, then the best place to do so is on Instagram at laurenbarber.co or through my website, www.laurenbarber.co. And if you haven't already, make sure you sign up to my emails, which also gives you access to a free library of meditations, workbooks, yoga nidra practices, and other tools of transformation. Until next time, keep trusting the beautifully chaotic process of unraveling.